And we return. It is today's Topical Currents, Monday edition. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. And today we discuss the disorder of osteoporosis. It causes some 700,000 spinal fractures each year in the U.S. That's more than twice the number of hip fractures. Joining us in the studio is Dr. Antonio Prats of Miami's Mercy Hospital. He's a neurosurgeon. We'll learn more about the latest in osteoporosis treatments. Welcome to you, Doctor. Thanks for coming by the studio. Here you are in your scrubs, and you have to leave the studio and go back and do spinal surgery.
Got to finish surgery this afternoon, yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Welcome, Dr. Prats.
Thank you.
So let's talk about osteoporosis. What are its causes, and what is its prominence?
Well, the cause is basically as we age. 50% of the ladies over 50 years of age will develop osteoporosis in their lifetime. And for the men, one out of five will also develop osteoporosis. And obviously as we age, that's going to become more prevalent.
So, but what is it exactly?
It's a disease of the bone where there's a reduction in the bone mass and the architecture, the bone substance is reduced. By this reduction, the bone becomes friable, weaker, and very brittle and more prone to fractures. And if you look at osteoporotic bone under a microscope, it looks porous, so the name osteoporosis.
And you say it's on the rise, especially osteoporotic fractures of the spine. Why is that? And is that just locally, or is that also nationally, internationally?
It's worldwide. Point your listeners to the International Osteoporosis Foundation, and they've put out a wealth of information, but there is a fracture that occurs worldwide once every 3 seconds. It's very prevalent.
And it's on the rise because?
In the United States, the baby boomers, and as we age, and the people, everybody's living longer, and therefore it's becoming more and more of a problem.
Could there be any sort of environmental causes for the increase?
Or? Actually, it seems one of the ways that you try to prevent it is by vitamin D and getting out in the sun. It's funny, everybody says all the bad things about being out in the sun. But
my dermatologist says the sun is his partner.
Exactly. People like in higher latitudes and so forth that can't get outside will have a tendency of having a little bit more osteoporosis. So that's the only environmental thing. Other things that we can control, things like smoking, alcohol use, and abuse will lead and help to develop osteoporosis.
Where does calcium fit in?
Calcium is part of the mineral that we need in our diet to help build bone. Bone is constantly being made and broken down. So it's made, it's reabsorbed, made and reabsorbed. And as we age, Bonnie, going back to your question, what happens is that reabsorption is increased and not enough bone is made. If we have calcium in our body, then that will promote the remodeling and the remaking of the bone.
When you say vitamin D and to get outside, does it also help to take supplements? I mean, is that not as effective?
It is, but remember, for things like calcium, if you take too much of the supplement, too much of the calcium, it can actually be detrimental. I think it's if you take over 2 grams a day, it can be detrimental, things like kidney stones and so forth. So if you eat a well-rounded, you know, diet and so forth, a lot of times it's not necessary. For women over 50, they need 1,200 milligrams of calcium a day, a little bit more than somebody younger.
What is osteopenia, and how is that different?
Osteopenia is, if you will, osteoporosis is osteopenia on steroids, if you will. It's osteoporosis is measured by a test called the DEXA scan, and that scan takes a normal young person and they say their bone is X strong. If your bone is 2.5 standard deviations away from that, you have osteoporosis. If it's 1 to 2.5 standard deviations below that, that's osteopenia. So it's getting to osteoporosis.
Does it always lead to it, or can you stop the tide?
No. You can. But I would, A lot of girls, young girls, are diagnosed with osteopenia, and I would strongly recommend that those girls be involved in vigorous exercises, running, jogging, jumping, weightlifting, things like that. My daughters, I get them weightlifting as much as I possibly can.
How about whole milk? They always say that has vitamin D in it.
It does, but again, it's calcium. The most important are calcium and vitamin D. And you can get those supplements. But if you eat a well-rounded diet, if you have a well-rounded diet and get out in the sun a little bit and exercise, that's the way to go.
I was really surprised to learn that most of these spinal fractures are undiagnosed and untreated. Why are they so difficult to diagnose?
Well, osteoporosis is similar to hypertension and hyperlipidemia. You don't know you have a problem until something bad happens. So unless you go looking for it or somebody goes looking for it, you don't know that you have it. But you have a lot of these fractures that occur, and people really are not symptomatic. They may have a little soreness in their back and so forth. And if you've seen some of the elderly patients that get like a hump, they're kind of hunched over like that, that is from multiple fractures. And that can actually affect pulmonary function if it gets bad enough. So it can be very serious.
Sometimes with elderly people, they'll tell you that they fell and their hip was broken, when actually their hip probably broke and that's what caused their fractured, and that's what caused their fall?
Not necessarily. In vertebral column fractures, which is what I take care of, most of my patients have had some form of trauma, fall. And the most common is, doc, I slipped at home and I fell on my buttocks, and then they developed a severe pain. But the osteoporosis can be so bad and the bone can be so brittle that simple gestures, I was getting out of the car, I coughed, I sneezed, is enough to cause a fracture.
So this DEXA scan, is that the same as a bone density test? Is that another name for it?
Yes, it's measured.
Okay, what age should you start getting tested, and how often should you get the test?
Well, again, I'd like to individualize everything for the particular patient, but I think that certainly if you have a family history of it, if you're a postmenopausal woman, if you're very sedentary and so forth, that's something that I would discuss with my primary physician.
We're speaking about osteoporosis, and we're going to get to some of the new developments in it with Dr. Antonio Prats. He's chief neurosurgeon of the Division of Neurosurgery at Mercy Hospital. If you have questions or comments and like to join in the conversation, the number is 1-800-743-9576. That's 1-800-743-9576. You can email us, radio@wlrn.org. Or you can tweet us at Topical Currents.
Dr. Wise, it seems like that osteoporosis is more common in women.
It has to do with the estrogen. And actually, it's the sex hormone, both in men and women, will go down as we age. But estrogen is very important. Estrogen prevents the reabsorption of bone. So that as women become postmenopausal, the estrogen decreases, so you have... You're not inhibiting the reabsorption, so therefore it leads to more reabsorption of bone.
Do you recommend people take estrogen?
No, remember...
hormone replacement?
Again, I think that's something you discuss with your primary physician, but remember, estrogen can also have some bad side effects, including everything we've heard about.
Breast
cancer, uterine cancer, heart disease, blood clots, and so forth. So you have to weigh the pros and cons.
I understand your dad was just diagnosed with osteoporosis. Is that right?
Well, my dad is 88, and he fell out of bed, and he's an older guy and fell out of bed. And he his bones are brittle, but he had a fracture in his spine, a compression fracture.
And did you do the surgery?
Techniques?
I did, yes. My mom also had a fracture, but, you know, women are the stronger sex, so she just grinned and bared it, but my dad was driving her crazy, so she said, do something.
It must be kind of weird operating on your own father.
All right, so...
Just another person, though.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this balloon kyphoplasty. Is it a new procedure?
It's not that new. I like to think of it as an evolution of something that's been going on. But in my opinion, it's a wonderful procedure for the correct patient. And I have many patients that are absolutely writhing in pain as they're going into the OR, and they come out afterwards and they're going home that afternoon and without pain. So it's a great procedure.
So what is it exactly?
It's a procedure that... I make a very small incision. It's a minimally invasive procedure. It's about 2 millimeter incision, usually 2 of my finger breasts or 3 of my finger breasts to the side. And you guide this needle, it's a pretty big needle, down to part of the bone. And the part of the bone that we go through is something called the pedicle. And that guides the needle down into the vertebral column where the fracture is. We take a biopsy because 1 in 20 patients who have compression fractures will have what's called a pathological fracture, which means it could be cancer. So 5%. So we take a biopsy and we send that away to the pathologist. After that's done, we put a balloon in there. We inflate the balloon with the idea that the balloon hopefully will restore some of that height. Remember, it's a compression. The bone collapses down.
Right.
So it'll restore some of that height. We deflate the balloon. We've created a cavity. And through the same opening, through the same needle, we inject a cement. And that cement hardens almost immediately. So it's the way that I explain it to my patients is you're sort of having a cast within the bone as opposed to outside the bone.
And what are the risks of the procedure?
Fortunately, few. The procedure can be done most of the time under sedation and local anesthesia. You don't need general anesthesia. But like any procedure in the spine, there's a risk of damaging the nerves. There's some very large vessels that are around the spine. There's a risk of damaging those. But knock on wood, those things are fortunately very uncommon. If this is wood.
Yeah.
For mica, whatever.
For mica. Well, I'm not going for.
And what is the recovery time?
Again.
Depends on the person.
No, but most of the time that afternoon. If I do the procedure in the morning, that afternoon they're going home. Without restrictions, there's no brace that you need. Nothing at all.
And it takes away the pain.
It takes away the pain. I have the patients come back about 2 weeks after the surgery, mostly to check on that, the pathology of the fracture that we were talking about. And then, again, because they are osteoporotic, I'm a big believer of doing exercises. So I want to get those patients up and about and exercising and in physical therapy.
What are the best exercises for the back?
Well, for osteoporosis, it's weight-bearing. It's not swimming. Swimming, for my back patients that have surgery, a lot of them I recommend swimming. But for osteoporosis, you want weight-bearing. You want jumping, jarring. Go out and dance. Do salsa and things like that. Anything where you're up and about is good for it. Lifting weights. I gave my mom a few pounds and told her to lift. I wish she did it more often, but weightlifting, weight-bearing exercises are ideal for this.
And swimming, even if you use weights in the pool?
Again, you want the gravity causing, stressing the muscles, and those muscles then stress the bone, and more bone is produced. So swimming is not the ideal exercise for osteoporosis. You want weight bearing, just go out and run. Even an elliptical is not as good. You want things where you're jumping, you're jarring, and that'll stimulate the bone.
But that hurts other things.
Other things, exactly. Exactly.
Is osteoporosis the cause of height and shrinkage with age?
It is. One of the things that I ask my patients when they come in is, are you shorter? And they'll say, yeah, doc, I'm an inch or two shorter than I was. And the other thing is, again, they will develop a hunched back or a hump that can occur over a long period of time. So the typical patient is someone who's over 65 years of age, even 55 years of age. They'll tell you that they are shorter. They'll tell you that they're stooping and bending over or have a hump. Another question is very important. If someone has had on steroids, a type of steroid, that will also weaken the bone, and a lot of those patients will develop fractures.
One of our callers has noticed that you're a neurosurgeon, wants to know the relationship between neurology and osteoporosis.
None. Again, I'm a surgeon, so I'm taking care of one of the complications.
And the spine is part of the neurosystem.
Of neurosurgeons. Yeah, exactly.
Why is one 50% more likely to have another fracture after sustaining the first one, and how do the odds multiply from there?
It is, we call it the fracture cascade. So if you, there are some differences in the numbers, and don't hold me exactly the numbers, but if you have one fracture, you have a fivefold increased chance of developing another. If you have a second fracture, it's 12. So that's when, again, certainly if one fracture, but two, you have to be very aggressive as far as preventing others.
Now, is kyphoplasty also effective for treating arthritis?
No, that's something completely different.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join in, 1-800-743-WLRN, 1-800-743-9576. Also, email, if you're a little shy, radio@WLRN.org, and you can tweet us. That's at Topical Currents. Thank you. Next up, first up, it's Ginger in Miami. Hi there.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Bonnie. And hi, Doctor. Is it Dr. Kranz?
Pratz.
Dr. Pratz.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. I know that I have low bone density from a scan that I had. And when I looked up the side effects of Boniva, I probably, you know, most doctors will think it was foolish. I did not take it. I read some really scary things online about it, and so I didn't take it. And now I'm kind of sorry in a way, because I have friends who have osteoporosis or had, and they say that when they took it, they recovered and they became normal again. And also, would you please explain to me why I've been reading articles that say taking calcium with vitamin D might cause women to have heart attacks or strokes, because that certainly makes some of us want to quit taking it.
Again, as far as the Boniva is something called a biphosphonate, and there are some risks involved with those, but fortunately those risks are small. You can have abdominal cramping, nausea, vomiting. They're even described what are called esophageal ulcers and so forth. But again, those things are relatively small. But there are others, and there are other types of medications that if the Boniva didn't work for you or you can't take it, there are other different types of medications that you could use.
Such as?
There's one called Forteo, which is an injectable type. There's one where you have it injected once every 6 months, and there are completely different groups of medications. It doesn't just have to be the biphosphonates.
Okay.
But again, I think that the most important thing before you start going with the medicines and so forth, and again, everybody's a little bit different, is you have to make sure that you have a good diet. Mm-hmm. And that diet includes the calcium, get out in the sun, get exercise. And,
right.
And when I say get out in the sun, even 20, 30 minutes is all that's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Exercise, you want to not smoke, obviously.
No, I don't.
Excessive alcohol, more than 2 or 3 drinks. There, it's been shown that it inhibits the absorption of calcium from our intestines.
A week, you mean, or 2 or 3 drinks a week?
No, a day, yeah. Actually, one drink has been shown to be beneficial for the absorption.
But, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Similar to what the daily glass of wine.
Exactly.
Right.
So again, I always try to educate my patients with the basics first and try to stay away from the medicines. And if there are some studies that have not shown any benefit in patients that are osteoporotic and don't have fractures. So there's some question about that. So again, those patients, I would strongly recommend evaluating their diet and exercising.
Oh, that's perfect. And what about the calcium? Because I quit it. I quit it when I read that article, and it was online, and it was in the paper.
Again, if you have too much calcium, it can lead to things like even kidney stones, and you're right, heart disease has been reported. That's why when Bonnie asked me earlier, you generally don't want to take more than 2,000 milligrams or 2 grams of calcium a day. And women should, postmenopausal women or women over 50 years of age, should probably be taking, if they're taking supplements, it should not exceed about 1,200 milligrams per day.
Yeah, that's about, I think I was prescribed 1,500.
Okay.
So I think that's what I was prescribed.
Yep.
But I stopped it because, you know, it kind of scares you when you see, oh, you may have a heart attack instead of having osteoporosis.
No, but I mean, remember, everything's in pros and cons and in moderation and so forth. So 1,500 milligrams is, I think, very appropriate.
It's also very easy to get misinformation off the internet.
It was everywhere, really. I think the doctor knows what I'm talking about because it was really pretty highly publicized. It was on the news, in the paper. I didn't just get it on the internet, so that made me wary. But thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Ginger.
You're welcome. Bye.
That's
bye.
Cool.
We have an emailer have read that taking biophosphates, I think what she...
Biophosphonates.
Is biophosphonates, and this is Irene, i.e. Actonel, causes the body to stop building its own bone over time, and if injury breakage of bones should occur, bones then take longer to heal, according to an orthopedic surgeon. Do you agree?
I respectfully no. Those biophosphonates, again, do not tend to produce more bone. One of the medicines I mentioned, Forteo, seems like it does. But as far as what it does do is it prevents a further reduction of the bone mass, and there is its benefits.
And we'll take another caller. This is Ginny in the Redland. Hi.
Hi. I have a lot of the same questions that the previous caller had. I was diagnosed with osteoporosis. They did find an old fracture. They don't know how old it was on my spine. They did recommend that I do take some sort of, I guess, biophosphonate, but I had also read about how damaging they were, or the side effects, and so I decided not to take them. I am a very fit person. I probably don't run enough, but I do try to go out and walk and, you know, get in the sun, and I don't take calcium. I did until maybe a year, 6 months prior to being diagnosed. But I wasn't sure about that being the best thing to do either. The other question I actually have, because you kind of answered some of my questions previously, is I understand from my sister's rheumatologist, she was treated for osteopenia, that after about 5 years, postmenopause, after about 5 years, the bone reduction begins to, it levels off as far as bone loss.
When you're 55, it stops at 55?
No, once you're postmenopausal.
It's
about 5 years later. In about 5 years, it kind of levels out, and you don't tend to lose a whole lot of bone mass after that if you're healthy.
I just read a report that shows that does continue. If I remember correctly, it is at an older age than 55 or 60, then it does level off, but not that at that young of an age.
No, yeah, I just said after 5 years postmenopause, that's all. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, so you probably think I'm not very wise for not taking the medication.
Not at all. I mean, again, okay. I keep going back. If you're exercising, you have a good diet, you're not smoking, all the things in your alcohol use and so forth, is reasonable. If you've had one fracture in the past, and I'm sorry,
I'm 56 right now, but I have had actually chemo for cancer treatment, and I don't know if that contributed to it. I also take Synthroid. I don't know if that contributed to it.
It certainly can. So if you had an old fracture and you're not symptomatic and you're active as you are, and you have reservations about the biphosphonates, I certainly would not be opposed to you continuing as you're doing now. But again, I keep stressing the exercise and the weight bearing. That's so important.
I'm hearing you. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Okay, we have an emailer. Mary, is there a long-term, 7 years or more, downside to taking alendronate? Alendronate? What are the typical 8 fractures that happen to women on alendronate for many years?
I'm not familiar with that.
Okay. Sorry, Mary. We don't know it. The medication.
And we move along to Judy in Miami. Hi there. Judy, you're up.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I thought that the listeners might want to hear what I have to say because I did have kyphoplasty a year ago. And I am 71 years old. I had food poisoning and was very lightheaded and went outside and, of course, fell. So I was very dizzy. So that was how it happened. I had no history of anything before. So it was just that kind of an accident. And I didn't know much about kyphoplasty, but it was the most incredible experience. And like you said, within a couple of days, I was up and walking, and I traveled to Europe 2 weeks later. I was amazed.
That's great.
That's a very typical history.
Yeah, okay. It was fabulous. But I wanted to ask, though, because I have this feeling like I have cement in my back, and I should be careful that it might split or crack, or as far as jumping and jarring. And is there any history of things coming undone afterwards if you don't watch your activity?
No, the cement hardens within minutes, within 10 minutes or so. So that's there to stay. There is actually someone mentioned about the complications. One of the things that can happen is you can have an extravasation of the cement, but you see that at the time of surgery.
What is that?
That means that the cement gets outside of where the fracture is. And even if it goes into like a little bit on the side and so forth, generally not a problem. As long as it doesn't go back behind the vertebral column is can be the spinal cord or the nerve roots. So as long as it doesn't occupy any space, it's usually not a problem.
What is this cement composed of?
It's a polymethyl methacrylate. It's this white, very smelly stuff. Actually, I like the smell of it, but it's...
of course, I picture cement.
No. It's this white, it looks like white chalky material. And it when you're squirting it in, when you're injecting in through the needle, I guess it looks like very thin toothpaste. But as it goes in, it has to be that consistency because you're squirting it in.
And then it hardens.
And then it hardens. And you see it.
That moves the vertebra.
The cement itself does not. The balloon has.
Okay.
And so that you've created that cavity,
and then the balloon comes out.
The balloon is deflated. That's removed, and you have the cavity, and then you inject the cement through the needle into the cavity that you've created.
On average, about how long does this procedure take?
20, 30 minutes. Yeah, it's very quick.
We're speaking about, in this moment, kyphoplasty, and in general, we're talking about osteoporosis on today's Topical Currents with Dr. Antonio Pratz. He's chief neurosurgeon of the Division of Neurosurgery at Mercy Hospital. We're going to take a short break, and we'll return.
This is Topical Currents on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station. WLRN listeners are educated, affluent, savvy consumers. If these are the people your business is trying to reach, consider becoming a WLRN program underwriter. Listeners, learn about your business and that you care about the future of public radio. Learn more by calling Michael Payton at 305-350-7978.
Broward College Fort Lauderdale Speaker Series begins its inaugural season at the Broward Center with seven fascinating evenings. Speakers include economist and publisher Steve Forbes, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Bob Woodward, Soledad O'Brien, author Jeanette Walls, oceanographer Jean-Michel Cousteau, and presidential historian Michael Beschloss. Information and subscriptions at the Broward Center at 954-462-0222 or online at fortlauderdalespeakerseries.com.
My name is Adria Pinky Gaete, and we're in Midtown Miami, corner of 27th Street and Northeast 2nd Avenue. Right now, the goalie has it. He's trying to check where to kick it to. Teammates are a little bit far away. He just kicked it. You have a kid that's handling the ball with the right foot, running down the side. He saved it and shoots in goal. You're listening to WLRN 91.3.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Dr. Antonio Pratz of Miami's Mercy Hospital. We're talking about osteoporosis and treatment options.
Can we go back to...
I have a caller up.
Okay.
We'll take the caller, then go back to the email. Linda in Fort Lauderdale. Hi.
Hi. 2 weeks ago, I bent over the big plastic dumpster where I live to retrieve something way at the bottom. I had discarded, and I heard a crack, like when you're eating crab's legs. And I knew I had done something to a rib, so I looked up on the internet, and it said, breathe deeply, cough, counterintuitively, sleep on that side. Now, it's almost 100% perfect. I'm wondering, will there be calcification? Will my size 2 clothes fit a little more snugly now, do you think?
Maybe I misunderstood. You have a rib fracture?
Well, I bent over my dumpster and I heard a crack, like when you're eating crab legs. And it bothered me. It was uncomfortable. So I looked up on the computer. It said, breathe deeply, cough, and sleep on that side, which sounds counterintuitive, it said. But anyway, I'm almost 100% comfortable now.
Okay.
Will there be calcification? Will it grow over...
Well, I'm not convinced you have a fracture. That could have been a musculoskeletal strain or tear.
Oh, but the sound was a real crunch sound.
Again, for you to get 100% in 2 weeks, that may not have been a fracture.
Oh,
if you assume that it is a fracture, no, you don't have to change your wardrobe.
Broken ribs are like 6 weeks.
Yeah. It generally takes longer than that. But again, the calcification, remember, when you a fracture heals, it heals by filling in the fracture line, but the calcification should not be excessive, so you shouldn't see it or feel
good.
It.
Oh, good. Well, I'm able to breathe. And my grandmother had, I think, 4 ribs removed when she had TB years ago, and I realize they are to protect the lungs. Well, she had a lung removed.
Yes.
So actually, you think I'll be 100%?
Sounds like you're, again, I'm not entirely convinced that you do have a rib fracture, but as long as you're doing well, I think that we'll be happy with that.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and we just want to say that on today's Topical Currents, we are discussing osteoporosis with Dr. Antonio Prats, but we're not giving any specific medical advice.
Right. General information.
Just general information. Now, back to this email from Mary. We learned that alendronate is the generic for Fosamax. So is there a long-term 7 years or more downside to taking it is the question. And what are these atypical fractures that happen to women who have been taking it for many years?
I apologize. I just know it as Fosamax. And one of the fractures that's been described is in the mid-femur. And it's very unusual. Again, that's something I don't take care of because I don't deal with those types of fractures. But that's one of the things that can happen with any kind of bisphosphonate, Fosamax being one of them. And it generally occurs with long-term use over 5 years. But again, it's a relatively rare phenomenon.
Okay.
Explain a fracture cascade.
It's what happens, as I was mentioning, when you have osteoporosis and you've developed one fracture, you are at an increased risk of developing a second fracture. And if you have a second fracture, next fracture, the chance of you developing another fracture increases exponentially. The numbers that I've read are a 5-fold increase after the first fracture and a 12-fold increase after the second fracture, and something like 70-fold increase after the third fracture.
Oh, you're giving me the heebie-jeebies here.
Eileen wants to know if osteoporosis is helped by yoga exercises, if it can prevent osteoporosis. Yoga,
again, high impact exercises are the ideal ones.
Okay.
So I would assume that if she can get what I know about yoga, you're stretching around, so I would assume that it shouldn't be that helpful. It would be helpful because she's in good health otherwise, but again, jarring, jumping, dancing, things like that are the best.
Okay. How about bench pressing?
Again, weight, remember, but that's for your upper body. And so that, sure, and that's very helpful. And but just if you get out and walk and you see those people walking up and down Bayshore with weights in their hand, that makes me very happy when I see that. And little old ladies who you already seen the hump on their back, and I see them at the gym working out. That's great.
Now, after the procedure, does that hump go away?
No. That hump is in the thoracic area. That's where the rib cage is, and so forth. And those patients have already had their fractures, and they have solidified in that position, so that you're not going to operate on those patients.
Okay, here's Pat. I believe there's a myth that people need to drink milk in order to prevent osteoporosis. I've read that consuming dairy, milk, and cheese is not beneficial. As a matter of fact, countries such as the U.S., which consume the most dairy, have the highest rate of osteoporosis. Other sources of calcium are green leafy vegetables, beans, lentils, celery, and raisins, and I ask you to comment.
No, it's only part of it, and you want to all the things that I've mentioned before. In addition, another high source of to add what the caller had mentioned, another high source is like tofu is very good, sardines, salmon. All those things are very high in calcium and so forth. But remember, calcium, you need vitamin D to have that calcium absorbed. So
right.
You can't just do one without the other.
Now, okay. In some of the material I was reading before the program, I read that Caucasians are more susceptible to osteoporosis. Why would that be?
Genetic. Caucasians and Asian women. I have in one of my slide presentations, I have this wonderful slide of three generations of Asian women. The granddaughter, who's upright, the mom, who's sort of hunching over, and then the grandmother, who's just bent completely forward. So there's a genetic predisposition to that.
And I used to hear, or I've heard, that women who have light eyes and are small and or petite have yes. are more prone to getting osteoporosis.
Yes, that's very
true.
That's very interesting. Yes, and actually heavier people, yeah, Bonnie, heavier people tend to have less osteoporosis. But think about it; they're carrying all that weight on them. And so if there's any benefit to being overweight, that's one of them. But
right.
you're absolutely right. Thinner people tend to, they have a higher chance of developing, yes.
This is Shira. Well, she asked for some high calcium foods, which we already just discussed. She also wants to know the effects of carbonated beverages and leaching of calcium from drinking them. Is that a fact?
No, I don't think so, no.
Okay. No. All right, Shira, well.
And we'll take another caller. Our number is 1-800-743-WLRN, 1-800-743-9576. This is Linda in Miami. Thanks for your patience. Hi.
Thank you. I have cervical and lumbar spinal disc disease and spondylosis for many years. And I lost my ability to walk because of a failed meniscectomy of the knee. Weight bearing was, so I was basically always water walking. Now there's compression of my sacral and lumbar nerve roots that's making it impossible to even do that, and I have osteoporosis since 2009. I was just wanting to know, from having already osteoporosis, would I be a bad candidate for spinal fusion?
It depends on the type of spinal fusion that you would need. But if it's the diagnosis is spinal stenosis, you may not need a fusion. There are other entities, other diseases that are involved with the spinal stenosis that for those you may need a fusion. But the answer to your question is, just because you have a degree of osteoporosis, that does not prevent you from undergoing a fusion.
The grafts will still take, the screws will hold?
They will. Again, it depends on the severity, but I would tend to do what's called an inner body fusion more so in someone like you, as opposed to what are called posterior lateral fusions and so forth.
If you're having problems, what sort of physician should you start with, an osteopath?
If from osteoporosis, you mean?
Yeah.
No, again, I would go to your primary physician. And he or she can help you and guide you and educate you. I think the main reason I'm here is because I think this is an epidemic that we're in, and I think it's going to get worse. And with the numbers that we have just read,
is that because we're living longer?
We are. And if you look at those numbers, and as our the baby boomers age, what is it, 80 million baby boomers or something, and plus the amount of healthcare dollars that are spent for patients like your callers and everything. It was estimated like $20 billion was spent on osteoporosis and fractures and so forth in the United States. And with this shrinking healthcare dollar that we're in today, it's a problem.
Now, with kyphoplasty, is that usually covered by insurance or Medicare?
It is, yes.
Here's a quick emailer. I think what she means is, it's from Rita, does it hurt? I mean, would it cause pain? I think she's talking about osteoporosis.
No, as I mentioned before, osteoporosis, you really don't feel anything. Again, my comparison to hypertension and hyperlipidemia. But obviously, if it develops to the point that you have a fracture, boy, you'll feel it.
We're speaking with Dr. Antonio Prats about osteoporosis today. He's the chief neurosurgeon of the Division of Neurosurgery at Mercy Hospital. Another short break, and we'll be right back with more calls and emails.
This is 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and NPR for the Florida Keys is 91.5 WKWM. Thanks for joining us today. The Miami-Dade Water and Sewer Department is committed to providing high-quality water and wastewater services, but much of the nearly 14,000 miles of pipelines are old and corroded. Improving the water and sewer system is an investment in the community. You can learn more at miamidade.gov/water. In our quickly changing world, one thing remains constant: the support of WLRN members. We depend on that support to keep another constant, the quality of our programming. If you've received a membership reminder in the mail, please send your check or give online at WLRNradio.org today.
And we're back with Dr. Antonio Pratz of Miami's Mercy Hospital. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman, and you say we have a tweet.
We have a tweet from Jordan. I've also heard of vertebroplasty. Is this the same as kyphoplasty?
It is vertebral. It's called vertebroplasty. Vertebroplasty is an injection of the cement into the fracture, but there's no balloon involved. And the idea is that you want the cement to kind of go in the interstices of the fracture and everything. In my opinion, that is, certainly in my hands, it's a more difficult procedure to do. And I again, with a kyphoplasty, you know exactly where the cement is going. You can direct it where you want it.
How long does the cement hold up?
Forever.
You sure? Okay. Let's take another call. Lynn in Fort Lauderdale. Hi.
Hello. Did you say Lynn? Am I on the line?
Yes.
Yes, you are.
Yes, hi. I am 71, and 6 years ago, I was hiking on the Bryce Canyon in Utah, and I slipped and fell and had a high femur fracture and broke my wrist, and I do have osteoporosis. I was taking Fosamax for 5 years, and when I was recovering from that, I heard on NPR that whole-body vibration is used for astronauts and also by the cosmonauts and all over the world. And I went online, and I found about 30 studies, and I've started to do that. I'm also very active. I take yoga. I do yoga every day, and my whole weight sometimes is on my hands and wrists, so there are lots of exercises in yoga that aren't just stretching, and I walk every morning 45 minutes. So I was just wondering about whole body vibration. No doctor I ever heard of knew about it, but my surgeon in Utah, when I called him to ask him if it would whole body vibration, if he knew anything about it, and it, or would it loosen my screws, because I have a 12 screws and a lag bolt in there, in my fracture, in my femur. He said no, and he developed the, he did research for 13 months on 500 New Zealand white rabbits on vibration, and he said it works and it won't loosen your screws, and I've been doing it ever since. So I was wondering what Dr. Pratz thinks of that.
First of all, I'm going to be visiting Bryce Canyon in August, so hopefully I won't have this.
Oh, be careful. Three people died also on my trip. Fell over cliffs, so do be careful.
I'm going to cancel as soon as... I'm sorry. I'm not familiar with those studies, and I don't know if they're scientific studies or if they've been done in humans. I don't know if, quite honestly, in someone who's as active as what you're describing, that you're walking so much... I don't know why you would need that, and I agree with what was said, that any kind of vibration. I've had patients have had very bad accidents on the Palmetto, and even that hasn't loosened their screws. So I
good. Well, I found 30 studies online, and a doctor in Boston was just starting one back at the time, and on postmenopausal women, and they say it's only 10 minutes a day that's needed. So I do that, too. I bought a little vibration machine, like a step aerobic, and I lie on it and sit on it and stand on it and do my stretches. And I'm hoping it's helping, because I don't want to take biophosphonates.
No, you aren't walking on your hands, are you, Lynn?
Only in yoga. Right.
Okay, we have to run.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. We move along to Lisa at Miami Beach. Hi.
Hi there. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Hi. I was diagnosed with spondylolisthesis and lateral spondylosis about 14 years ago, so it was not related to osteoporosis, although my back pain has gotten progressively worse since then. And my question to the doctor is if his procedure would work for someone with that type of injury.
No, for the spondylolisthesis?
Yes.
No. You mean the kyphoplasty?
Right.
No. That's the procedure I was doing this morning. That's a slippage of one of the vertebrae on the other, and you don't use kyphoplasty for that. That's something completely different.
Because I was told it's a pretty complicated operation with pins and rods and a lot of recovery. So this, your operation would not work for something like that.
It's something completely different.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, this is an email from a Dr. David who says, most of the osteoporosis meds increase bone calcium but don't restore the horizontal bone structure that osteoporosis breaks down, so the tests show the increase in bone calcium but not an increase in bone strength. And his second point is Harvard grad Dr. John Lee, who passed away a few years ago, did research that showed that progesterone deficiency is common and related to bone loss, and progesterone replacement therapy actually shows reversal of bone loss.
The only medicine I defer to the doctor about that. But
of course, you're a surgeon.
Yeah, I'm a surgeon. The only one that I'm aware of that actually builds bone, and I agree with what he said. The others prevent it from breaking down. And his points are very well taken, is the Forteo. Unfortunately, that's an injectable medicine, and that you have to do that for 2 years. You're injecting yourself daily for 2 years.
Okay. What's the youngest patient you've seen with osteoporosis that you've done this procedure on? Ballpark.
Late 40s.
Mm-hmm. Here, Joan wants to know if the DEXA scan is dangerous and if once a year is okay.
It isn't dangerous. Actually, I just read this not too long ago. It's less radiation. It's actually two beams of X-ray beams. It's less radiation that you would get flying from New York to California and back.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
And next caller, Shanda in Miami. Hi.
Oh, hello. My name is Shanda, and I am a fairly active person, but when I was 36, I was diagnosed with osteopenia. I swim a lot, but I also walk, I lift weights, I jog or run about 3 times a week. And I'm calling to find out, is there something maybe in my diet or my exercise that I should do more of to help avoid getting osteoporosis in the future?
I'm going back to the things we talked about. As long as you're not a smoker, and if you're that active, I assume you're not, and your alcohol intake is not excessive, I think you're the poster child of someone who is trying to prevent that from developing. Remember, there's some genetic predisposition to it, so at least if you develop the osteoporosis, you can take solace knowing that you've done everything possible to avoid it.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
So if your parents had it, you probably need to kind of keep an eye on things.
Yeah.
And also do live the lifestyle that you recommend.
Yes.
And this is from Gail. I have taken strontium bone maker. Are you familiar with that? Strontium? Strontium. Okay. And she said she's gained back an inch of height after losing two. She'd been diagnosed with osteoporosis, and 2.5 years later, she's gained an inch, and now she's just diagnosed with osteopenia. Strontium. Okay. All right.
And one more caller. We're very short on time. Sandra, North Miami. Hi.
Hi, Rick. My question was for the doctor regarding calcification. I've been diagnosed with the cervical spine calcification and a pinched nerve, but I'm also very active, and I do Pilates every day for 3 years now, and I dance, and I do all these things to prevent calcification or reverse calcification with supplements like silica. Is that possible?
Well, it depends. Is it the longitudinal ligament is calcified, or what exactly is calcified?
I'm not exactly sure, but this was a diagnosis over 4 years ago, and I just never wanted to go back and know about it. I do have the neck pain, and I've done the therapy and all these things, but I take no medication other than migraine for headache.
Doctor?
So I'm not medication prone or try to stay away from all of that, just try to supplement
okay,
with
Sandra, let him answer. We're very short on time.
No, again, it's obviously that's completely different than osteoporosis, but it really, I don't know if I can answer your question because it depends on where the calcification is. So there is a ligament that becomes calcified, and there is a genetic predisposition to that. So again, it just depends.
We're speaking, or we've been speaking, with Dr. Antonio Prats. He's chief neurosurgeon of the Division of Neurosurgery at Mercy Hospital. Is there a website? Do you have a website yourself or just Mercy Hospital?
We have under Consultants of Neurological Surgeons.
Okay, very good. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And that wraps up today's edition. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. We have free audio archives and audio downloads at our website, WLRN.org, and more information and associated links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program is with University of Illinois Professor Robert McChesney. We'll discuss his book, Digital Disconnect, How Capitalism is Turning the Internet Against Democracy. Now today's calendar. On this day in 1881, 132 years ago, 21-year-old William Billy the Kid Bonney is shot and killed by Sheriff Pat Garrett at Fort Sumner, New Mexico. Legend has it that Bad Billy killed 21 men. That's now been whittled down to 4. And on this day, 1952, 61 years ago, Ted Mack's Amateur Hour presents a gold cup and $2,000 to an 8-year-old Atlanta girl for a singing prize. Her name? Gladys Knight. One more while we recall the boy governor. On this day in 1992, 21 years ago, Arkansas's Bill Clinton is nominated for the presidency at the Democratic Convention in New York. California's Jerry Brown finished second. Al Gore was nominated for vice president by voice acclamation. We leave with a thought from Bill Clinton, third youngest president after Teddy Roosevelt and JFK. Quote, "A lot of presidential memoirs, they say, are dull and self-serving. I hope mine are interesting and self-serving." Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned now for Here and Now from NPR News.
This is 91.3.